This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this Latin American edition of the program, Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador travels to Washington to celebrate an updated U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade deal, and Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro tests positive for COVID-19. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. After continually scoffing at the lethality of the coronavirus, Brazil's president succumbed to the disease last week. VOA's newsroom reports that Brazil trails only the United States in the number of confirmed coronavirus cases and deaths. Bolsonaro has come under sharp criticism from tens of thousands of Brazilians who have opposed his weak pandemic response by undermining quarantine and social distancing measures introduced at the state level. The New York-based Sufan Center cites the Wall Street Journal in its recent Intel Brief publication, saying that even though Latin America comprises just 8% of the world's population, over the past several weeks, the region has accounted for nearly half of all deaths worldwide. In addition, the Sufan Center reports that COVID-19 has exposed political fault lines throughout the region, whereby heads of state clash with governors and state and local leaders regarding the best approach to preventing the spread of the virus. And Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, also known as AMLO, made his first foreign trip since assuming office about 19 months ago. He chose to go to Washington last Wednesday, where he and U.S. President Donald Trump participated in a bilateral meeting and working dinner to celebrate the entry into force of the new free trade agreement, which updated NAFTA, called the USMCA, the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement. Well, with us for an update on the health, economic, and political impact of the coronavirus pandemic in Latin America and other related issues are two distinguished regional analysts. Eric Farnsworth is Vice President of the Council of the Americas and the Americas Society, based here in Washington, and Benjamin Gadan. He's Deputy Director of the Woodrow Wilson Center's Latin American Program, that's also based in Washington. And both gentlemen join me via Microsoft Teams as we continue to practice social distancing. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Hi, Carol.
Thanks, Carol.
Let's begin with you, Eric Farnsworth, Brazil. After the United States, evidently Latin America boasts the highest number of COVID-19 infections in the world. And according to the Sufan Center, Brazil has more new infections and deaths on a daily basis than any other country in the world. What do you make of that? And of course, now the president coming down with COVID-19.
Yeah, it's a real tragic situation across the region. Brazil clearly is a hot spot, and the pandemic doesn't seem yet to have peaked across the region. It's something of great concern, I think, to all of us. The irony is that some of the countries like Chile, Peru, even Argentina got out of the blocks relatively quickly, did some things that were effective, it seemed, at first. But the pandemic has returned with a vengeance. And indeed, even some of those initial steps have proven ineffective. And a lot of us have scratched our heads and said, well, why does it seem to be worse across the region than perhaps in some other parts of the world? And, you know, there's a variety of reasons for it. But one of them clearly has to be the informality in the business sector. It's really difficult to practice social distancing if you literally have to get out every day and sell small items or send your children out to sell things so that the family can survive, so that they can eat. And so I think that's something that has to be looked at. Also, Latin America, as we all know, is unfortunately the region, even today, that is the most disequal across the world. And so that definitely plays into it, too, in terms of access to health care, in terms of access to social services, in terms of who is financially able to take the steps that might be necessary to protect themselves and their families versus who isn't. And so if you look at a country like Brazil, which is a continent-sized country, it's the largest country in Latin America, not just by economy, but by physical space. It's incredibly diverse geographically, racially, economically, and it's really difficult under those circumstances to get a pandemic under control. And then you layer on top of that a leader who has quite intentionally disdained some of the measures that have proven effective elsewhere around the world and almost intentionally gone out to do things that are against best practices to show that indeed the COVID isn't as bad in his mind as perhaps others say that it is. Well, he's come down with it now. We wish the best for him, as we do for anybody who's come down with COVID-19. But it does show that political leadership matters, even under the best of circumstances. A country like Brazil would most likely struggle under the current crisis.
Turning to you, Benjamin Gadan, for your take on what's going on in Latin America, why the resurgence, even after a good start, and now, of course, the Brazilian president has come down with the disease.
I think Eric has pointed out many of the key factors that explain the severity of the spread of COVID-19 in Latin America. One that I would add is the urban density. This is a region where, you know, large portions of populations live in cities. And not only are they crowded in cities, crowded in marketplaces, often going out because otherwise they've lost their daily wage, but they also have these huge informal communities known as shanty towns or slums. In Brazil, they're the favelas, they're the villas in Argentina. In these areas, it's absolutely impossible to practice social distancing. Sometimes there's not basic hygienic infrastructure such as clean running water, access to soap. The testing is difficult. And, you know, enforcing any of these measures, even in places that, as Eric points out, have been very aggressive, Peru, Argentina, they've had some of the social distancing measures in place since mid-March. And, you know, there's been some success because of that, but the structural challenges are enormous. And because of that, I think despite the best of intentions and even some conscientious public health measures that were economically and politically difficult, they've not produced the results that had been hoped for.
Well, back to you, Eric Farnsworth. Let's go back to Jair Bolsonaro coming down with COVID-19. Why is the issue of coronavirus so politically polarizing in Brazil?
Well, this is a question that a lot of people are asking, and the president has clearly made it a political issue in Brazil rather than a medical issue. Whereas the medical professionals are indicating all the things that should be done, the president of Brazil has publicly disdained those efforts for his own political reasons. I can't speak for him, but it does seem to suggest that either he doesn't believe the medical advice in the first place, or perhaps that in order to rally his base, he thinks it's better to have a different approach that would put an us versus them type scenario into Brazilian politics. He is a president who came to power some months ago, really railing against the corruption of Brazil and railing against the high crime rates that had exploded in Brazil under the previous governments. And those are the issues that he's tried to make a stand on. But it's become clear that as Brazil's economy continues to suffer, as some of the progress against corruption hasn't been as dramatic as some would have hoped, indeed, it has hit close to his own family members, as the crime rates in Brazil have not necessarily come down, that he's become politically vulnerable. So this might be a way for him to try to rally his base.
Benjamin Gadan, he got some high marks, President Jair Bolsonaro, before the pandemic, for fueling the economy and so forth. And of course, he's of the view that the costs of shutting down the economy during the pandemic were just too high. What would you add or subtract to what Eric said with respect to why this issue has become so politically polarizing?
Bolsonaro is not alone in believing there's a public health economic growth trade-off, which I think has been proven in most cases not to be the case, and that the best path toward surviving economically this pandemic is to reduce as quickly as possible the spread of COVID-19. I think Bolsonaro just simply has not accepted that, despite, you know, lots of evidence supporting the idea that public health needs to be the primary concern. And I think you see that in the results. I mean, Latin America will contract by over 9%, but Brazil will contract by more than the average. It's closer to over 9% at least, and maybe even higher. I think Bolsonaro's base includes a lot of the demographics that'll be severely affected by economic suffocation, which is what these lockdowns involve. So I think, you know, there is an understandable reluctance in many places, including Brazil, to believe that the only way for the economy to recover with any speed is to reduce the devastating effects in the short term. And it's true. Look, some of these effects in the short term will have long-term damage for the economy. You don't just reopen and everyone who lost their job gets a job again. Companies that went bankrupt don't immediately reopen their doors. So if you are a leader contemplating what 2021 will look like, you hope to reduce the wreckage of 2020. That said, the way to do so is to tackle the virus, not to ignore it.
That's certainly the case. Even here in the United States, we're having some problems with this trade-off. Well, back to you, Eric Farnsworth, to talk about how the pandemic has exposed and exacerbated these political fault lines between heads of state like Bolsonaro and then governors and state and local leaders regarding how to contain the virus. How concerned are you about this disconnect? And where else besides Brazil do you see this discrepancy between the heads of state and then local leaders? And who do you think's winning?
Well, we certainly see it here in the United States, don't we, Carol? But we see it in Latin America, in other federal states too, like Mexico. And there's a very simple reason for that. If the head of the government does not take responsibility to address these issues, the people on the ground who are facing the effects of the pandemic are the ones who have to deal with it. There's just no alternative. And so the governors, the mayors, the community leaders are the ones who are faced with people in desperate situations. So they're the ones who have to seek, you know, ways to address it in hospitals, in medical services, in all kinds of other ways. And look, one of the stresses that the pandemic has exposed is in the healthcare system itself across the region. And of course, every country is different. But one of the things that Latin America broadly has been known for is very good healthcare for those who can afford it. The problem is that there aren't a whole lot of people who can afford it. And for the rest, the healthcare delivery system, really, there are a lot of deficiencies. And so if there's a pandemic, a life or death situation, just access to basic healthcare, and Ben mentioned something that's really important. If you don't even have access to clean water and soap, it's kind of hard to wash your hands. And if you can't do basic sanitation like that, addressing, you know, a pandemic that's highly contagious is really problematic. So some of the cleavages that many of us have been talking about for many years and have existed pre-pandemic and probably will continue to exist really have been exposed as accelerators of the pandemic itself. And that's a real tragedy. There are political implications here, and there will have to be some sort of addressing these issues going forward.
Benjamin Gadin, what's your take on this disconnect between heads of state and governors and state and local leaders? Are we seeing any support resources coming from the federal governments to help with the on-the-ground problems?
Carol, I actually think it's fairly encouraging to see this disconnect. For one, it's the better public health responses that we've seen in some places, including in Brazil at the governor level, in Mexico at the city level, that compensate for some ill-conceived public health strategies at the national level. So I think it's positive in that regard, even though coordination is often nice and national leadership is often essential. I'd also say it's helpful from a democratic standpoint. I think there was a lot of concern coming into COVID-19 that you would have growing authoritarian instincts and a concentration of power in the presidency. This is a longstanding problem in Latin America. You've had courts not able to function. You've had legislatures hardly able to function because of stay-at-home measures. And so in that situation, with a flood of executive orders, there was this sense that Latin America was becoming even more presidentialist, was concentrating power in the executive. I think it's helpful to the democracies in the region to have power diffused in a federalist system. So I think for both reasons, both innovation and sometimes better policy at the local level, and also a diffusion of power, I think actually has been helpful to Latin America's coronavirus response. I would say, though, that there are other examples where there's been some coordination. Argentina, we mentioned, it was recognized by Time magazine for one of the best coronavirus responses in the world. This is despite the economic wreckage that Argentina brought into the pandemic of a debt crisis and years of slow growth and, in fact, negative growth. And there, you've had the opposition mayor of the capital city of Buenos Aires, who's been appearing at press conferences with the governor of the province of Buenos Aires and the president, working not quite in lockstep, but at least avoiding the kind of deep political divisions that have plagued Argentina in recent years. And not only that, but the health ministry in Argentina has monopolized the production and distribution of key equipment such as respirators, so that unlike in the United States, you don't have local governments in Argentina competing against one another to inflate the prices of these vital medical products. So there have been examples of decent coordination, even across political parties and even across different levels of government.
We'll have more about the political ramifications of the pandemic in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Castiel. My guests are Eric Farnsworth, Vice President of the Council of the Americas and the Americas Society, and Benjamin Gadan. He's Deputy Director of the Woodrow Wilson Center's Latin American Program, and they both join me via Microsoft Teams, and we are discussing the latest news from the region. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Here's a big shout out to a loyal listener and Facebook fan, Olubenga Ibiyemi from Ilorin, the capital of Kwara State in Nigeria. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. So, gentlemen, back to our program, and we want to get back to the pandemic and implications. But first, quickly, on the visit of AMLO, that is, of course, President Andres Manuel López Obrador. He visited the White House last week to celebrate the new and improved NAFTA, which is, of course, now called the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement. What's your take on this visit, Eric Farnsworth? Did AMLO get anything out of it? What was it all about?
Well, I think at the basic level, it was to celebrate the passage and the implementation of the USMCA, which occurred on July 1st. This really was quite an achievement for all three countries, and of course, Canada is also a party to it. The amount of political baggage that NAFTA had attained over the years from both political parties, in my personal view, completely unfairly and unnecessarily, but it did develop over the years to the point where its replacement, or at least updating, probably was a political necessity. Nonetheless, doing so was not a political certainty, particularly in this environment here in Washington. But the fact that it was done, and it was done in a relatively timely manner, and it was done in a way that will maintain the basic structure of North American economic connectivity, I think, is a very positive result. And so Mexico, in particular, relies on the open trading relationship with the United States for its own economic health and well-being. And so this is an absolutely critical priority for López Obrador in order to have the resources to develop his own domestic agenda, which is why he was elected president in the first place in 2018. So him coming to Washington to celebrate the passage and implementation of that agreement makes a whole lot of sense from that perspective. The question arose because of the timing primarily. We've talked a lot about the coronavirus, and in Mexico, the pandemic still hasn't peaked. So there was a question, should he be out of the country at this time? But there's also a question, should he be in Washington really as the U.S. presidential elections begin to heat up? And does this overly politicize the relationship in an unnecessary and unhelpful way? That's something we can't know until a little bit more time recedes, but it is something that some observers, particularly in Mexico, were raising. He also came to seek U.S. assistance for COVID. There is a very active relationship between the United States and Mexico in the public health sphere, and I think that's a positive. And, of course, to discuss immigration, which is a perennial issue between the United States and Mexico. So what did he get out of it? I think that remains to be seen, but he can go back to Mexico and he can show that in his first trip abroad, he met with the president of the United States to celebrate an agreement that I think most observers would say is very positive for Mexico.
Benjamin Gadan, he met with the president of the United States, who didn't always have good words about Mexico and Mexicans, especially with respect to immigration. How does this visit benefit Mexico, in your view?
AMLO has been a master at not being provoked by the United States and has managed to survive politically despite, you know, accepting blow after blow, and not only rhetorical offensives against Mexico and Mexicans, but also actual policy disputes. And in each case, AMLO has simply accepted the U.S. agenda. I particularly am thinking of migration policy. Security in Mexico has worsened from already perilous levels since AMLO took office. And when he stood up this new National Guard, he ended up deploying it to Mexico's southern border, basically at U.S. instructions, to reduce the flow of Central American migrants to the United States. He's accepted migrants into northern Mexico as they await decisions from the immigration authorities in the United States. And as I've said, he hasn't responded to most of the insults that he has received from the White House. But again, he's managed to survive it politically. I think his approval rating is still over 60%, which is extraordinary given proven not very impressive response to COVID-19. Mexico has over 275,000 cases. Given his sort of odd reluctance to stimulate the Mexican economy, Mexico will contract this year by over 10%, which is an unbelievable economic blow and worse than the regional average, which will contract probably by just over 9%. And so, look, he's someone with zero foreign policy agenda. Eric sort of mentioned in passing that this is his first trip out of the country as president, which is notable given that, you know, he's one of the key figures in Latin America. And if his domestic agenda is also faltering because of the economic fallout from his economic response to COVID-19, he doesn't have really much to show right now. And yet he's maintained the support of a good chunk of Mexicans who still are confident that he's an honest guy who has the interests of, you know, the working class at heart. And to continue to promote that agenda with any credibility, I think he does need to make sure that the U.S.-Mexico trade relationship is stable. And I agree entirely with Eric. I think he has succeeded in making sure that this agreement went through the finish line and in making sure that none of President Trump's threats to impose tariffs on Mexico have ever come to pass. And so as much as we may say that he's not shown great dignity in defending Mexican pride, he has managed both to maintain popularity at home and to, you know, avoid real economically damaging clashes with the U.S. administration. And for that, I think he does get high marks.
And Benjamin, very quickly, should Joe Biden win the presidency in the elections, what do you think the relationship would be like between AMLO and a Biden administration? Could he navigate that?
It's an important question. I think Eric is right that there was some jeopardizing of the bipartisan support for Mexico, given the timing of this visit by AMLO. It had echoes of this engagement between candidate Trump and the former president of Mexico in the heart of that campaign. I think in this case, though, there wouldn't be much change in policy. It's too important a relationship to the United States as well. The interlinkages between the economies, the security and migration concerns. I think a Biden administration would seek very close relations with Mexico and would have no trouble establishing them. I think the more complicated relationship would be between Bolsonaro and a President Biden. And that is not only because Bolsonaro has called himself the Trump of the tropics and so deeply associated himself with Trumpism, with Make America Great Again policies, but also there'll be real disputes between a Biden administration and a Bolsonaro administration on human rights issues above all, but also on environmental issues. And so that also extremely critical relationship in the hemisphere, I think really would be uncertain. And in part because of some partisan orientations, Bolsonaro has violated these sort of cardinal rules of diplomacy where you don't associate yourself with one political party, particularly in a key relationship like this, but also real different perspectives on environmental and human rights policies that would jeopardize Brazil-U.S. relations.
So the question is, you know, what impact will the coronavirus pandemic have on the political landscape in Latin America and on strongmen and populists like Bolsonaro? Could this strengthen democracy, as Benjamin Gedan suggested, insofar as we're seeing a lot of mayors and local leaders step up to the plate? How do you see it?
I think one thing what we're finding is that coronavirus is amplifying pre-existing conditions. So countries that have enjoyed strong democratic institutions, I think will weather this okay. Countries where authoritarianism has been a challenge or where institutions are weak or that are divided and polarized, I think the coronavirus is amplifying those divisions as well. It's going to make it more difficult going forward.
The last word to you, Benjamin Gedan.
I think Eric's right. It's 100% about pre-existing conditions for Latin America. I've talked about the region experiencing an artificial calm, mostly due to social distancing measures. But 2019 was a period of enormous tumult in Latin America with enormous protests in places like Bolivia and Ecuador and Colombia. I think there's no reason to think that the region can avoid that as soon as, you know, these quarantines are lifted. And that's because the conditions of the region going in were really fragile. We don't know exactly how it will play out, but unfortunately, it's just hard to predict any stable political environment given how deeply affected the economies of the region will be and how fragile they were before this pandemic. And so while I don't see a lot of militaries in the region looking to govern, particularly in such a difficult situation, even though they are playing more prominent roles in coronavirus response and humanitarian response, food distribution, building temporary hospitals in places like Mexico, Argentina, you know, enforcing curfews in places like Peru, outside of a few outliers like El Salvador or the countries that are already authoritarian now, like Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua, I don't see the democracies collapsing in the short term in Latin America. What I do see is a period of great uncertainty and enormous political pressure because incumbents simply will not have the resources needed to rise to this occasion.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have on this special Latin American edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Eric Farnsworth, Vice President of the Americas Society and Council of the Americas, and Benjamin Gadan, Deputy Director of the Latin American Program at the Woodrow Wilson Center's Latin American Program. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.